Chapter 32. Snowed In. Walking out of the library that evening to go home, they were all surprised to see how much worse the storm had become. At least 20 centimetres of snow had fallen, and Mr. Simon's car was completely covered by drifts. Thankfully, in the winter he always carried a shovel, so Peter and Thomas set to work right away to help him move away the snow. Verity found the ice scraper in the car and did her best to brush all the snow off the windows. After 20 minutes of hard work, Mr. Simons tried to back up out of the parking lot, but he was still quite stuck. All three of them had to help push the car out. It took many tries before they finally pushed it back onto the road. "You know," said Peter anxiously before he set off to walk home, "it looks a lot worse now than it did before. If you find it's too bad, you're all welcome to stay over at my place." "Thanks, Peter. We'll definitely keep that in mind." Mr. Simons nodded appreciatively. They prayed for God's guidance and protection on their trip home, and then they drove slowly through the town. The roads were deeply covered in snow, and the wind made it hard to see, even with the shelter of houses on each side. When they finally came to the intersection with Highway 3, barriers were up, declaring the road closed. Mr. Simons hesitated. "I do know a back way home, but I think it might be better to take Peter up on his offer." Back they drove across town. Following Thomas and Verity's directions, they made it at last to Peter's house. A welcome light glowed from the living room window. They were all relieved not to have to drive any further. Peter came quickly to the door at the sound of their knock and happily ushered them in. Mr. and Mrs. Bryant greeted everyone pleasantly and shook Mr. Simon's hand. "You must be cold," Mrs. Bryant said compassionately. "I'll make you all a hot drink." Mr. Simons asked if he could make a couple of phone calls to explain to his wife and Cara Lovell why they wouldn't be coming home. While he was doing this, Peter led Thomas and Verity into the living room to warm up in front of the fire. Sitting down on a big sheepskin rug, Verity realized how chilled she had become. Thomas stretched out on the carpet, and Peter sat down between them. "This is a bonus," Peter said with a grin. "I was just thinking, too, on the way home, about a question I wanted to ask Mr. Simons." While they were waiting for the adults to join them, Verity noticed several photograph albums on a big bookshelf against the wall. One in particular attracted her attention. It was a mid-sized album with gold letters on the spine that spelled Peter. "Do you mind if I have a look at those photo albums?" she asked him. Peter shrugged. "Not at all." Verity walked over and picked up the Peter album. "There are better ones," Peter groaned. "My mum put that one together." She smiled. "This one looks interesting to me." As she opened it up, Thomas jumped to his feet and came to sit on the other side of her. "Ah, baby Peter," he commented as they turned to the first picture. Two small boys with big brother smiles were holding a little baby wrapped in blue. "I didn't know you had brothers," Verity remarked. "Yes, they're older than I am. Andrew is 5 years older," he said, pointing to a scrawny-looking boy with blonde hair and freckles, "and James is 3. They both work down in the Maritimes for my mum's brother." The album seemed to be a sampling of Mrs. Bryant's favourite pictures, for the next photo was of Peter learning to walk. Then there was Peter pulling the cat's tail and Peter making a mess with chocolate cake. "What a cute little boy you were," Verity murmured teasingly. Thomas and Verity flipped slowly through the pictures of a small lad being read stories, attempting to hold a baseball bat, and playing with his brothers. Suddenly, on the next page, Peter slapped his hand down over the photo before they could see it. "You can look at all the rest, but not this one," he said, laughter in his eyes. Verity's curiosity was greatly aroused. "Now I have to see it," she exclaimed, trying to pry his hand off. "Help me, Thomas," she called out, but Thomas shook his head. Realizing she didn't have the strength alone, she gave up, saying, "Okay, I'll turn the page." Peter turned it for her carefully so he could keep the picture from view. School photos were next. Verity and Thomas had fun picking out which boy was Peter among all the other students. Since this was their first year in Granville, it was also interesting to see many of their classmates as youngsters. Some they recognized right away, but others Peter had to point out. A few of them had changed so much that Thomas roared with laughter. When Verity felt Peter's guard was down, she quickly flipped back to the page with the secret photo. Both she and Thomas burst out laughing as Peter tried in vain to cover it. A cute little 3-year-old boy with straight blonde hair in a pageboy cut and big brown eyes smiled out at them. He was all dressed up to go somewhere special, Between the haircut and fancy little outfit, he looked more like a girl than a boy. Thomas doubled over in laughter. I can't believe you haven't burned that one, Peter. I can't, moaned Peter. It's my mum's favourite. She always wished she'd had a girl. Verity was studying it carefully. I think it's gorgeous, she said. You would have made a pretty little girl. Peter looked at her sideways. Thanks for the compliment, he said sarcastically. As they flipped through the last part of the album, Verity realised how much she didn't know about Peter's life. There were a lot of camping, canoeing and fishing pictures. His brothers were in many of the photos and they all looked so happy together as a family. Now she appreciated a little more how close he was to his parents and his brothers, whom she had never met. Is this James or Andrew? She asked him, pointing to one of the two brothers whose dark colouring was opposite to Peter's. He seems to be with you the most. That's James, Peter replied. He's only 3 years older than me, so we've been pretty close growing up. Andrew's kind of a typical firstborn, thinks he knows everything. But James is just a really good friend, kind of goofy, kind of serious, but always right there for anyone who needs him. Peter paused and then added, I wish he didn't live so far away. This was all a surprise to Verity. Until tonight, she'd assumed Peter had always lived alone with his parents. As she continued turning the pages, her perspective changed with each photo she saw. How come you're not saying, I'm so cute anymore? Peter teased. Verity glanced at him reproachfully. She's probably trying to think of a better word, Thomas remarked slyly. You could use handsome now, Verity. Feeling that she was being set up, Verity kept her head down examining the pictures and thinking of how to respond. It wasn't Peter's looks that made him so special to her, but an appreciation of the kind of person he was. True, there was no other face she looked forward to seeing more than his, but it was the warmth and caring that radiated from his eyes which was far more attractive than their shape or colour. That's not all I like about him, she murmured very quietly, her eyes fixed on the photographs. Pardon me, I didn't quite hear that, Peter said, leaning over and trying to sound like he was still just teasing. Verity was quite relieved when Mr. Simons and the Bryants came back in at that moment. After handing each of the teens a hot chocolate, the adults settled down on the couch. Becoming serious again, Peter remembered the question he had been pondering. Mr. Simons, a few classes ago you mentioned something about the nation of Israel, that they were fulfilling Bible prophecy right now. I don't understand why God would give the land of Israel back to the Jews when most of them don't even believe in him, and the ones that believe don't accept Christ. With an understanding smile, Mr. Simons nodded. That's one of my favourite questions to answer, Peter. What we have seen happen with the nation of Israel in the last century is a miracle. Right before our very eyes, we've been able to see Bible prophecies fulfilled to the letter. Do any of you know why there wasn't a nation of Israel for almost 2,000 years? Mr. Bryant commented, I suppose because the Jews rejected Jesus as their Messiah, so God allowed the Romans to totally overthrow them. Right, Mr. Simons agreed. Many places in the Gospels, Jesus warned them that this would happen because they refused to accept him for who he was. So God punished his people. Now the question is, did God ever intend to show favour upon the Jewish nation again, or was he completely finished with them? I thought that God is working with everyone now, Peter said, leaning back on his arms. Aren't we in the times of Gentiles, or something like that? Mr. Simons nodded. Yes, Peter, that's true. Maybe Romans chapter 11 is a good place to start. He opened up the Bible that he had brought in with him, and Peter jumped up to grab his. To give them a sense of the context, Mr. Simons tried to show them from the beginning of the chapter that Paul was discussing this very issue. Hath God cast away his people? Was the opening question of the chapter. The following verses explained that God had stopped working nationally with Israel for a time, giving the Gentiles, the other nations, the opportunity to have salvation. But look at verses 25 to 28, he continued. Thomas, maybe you could read verse 25? Thomas read, For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part is happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. So is there an end to Israel's blindness, Thomas? Mr. Simons asked. Yes, he replied. It says they'll be blind until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. Right, fullness just means full number. Peter, can you read verse 26? He read, And so all Israel shall be saved. As it is written, There shall come out of Zion the Deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. Mr. Simons looked around. Does anyone know who this deliverer refers to? When he saw everyone's head shaking, he explained, This refers to Christ returning to the earth. He is the deliverer. Note that this deliverance connects with Israel being saved and ungodliness being turned away from them. The word Jacob is commonly used in the Bible to refer to all of Israel. Verity, could you please read verses 27 to 28? She did. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins. As concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sakes, but as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sakes. Why would Paul say the Jews were enemies for the believers' sakes? Mr. Simons questioned. Mr. Bryant spoke out again. Well, the Jews were persecuting the believers at that time. That's right, said Mr. Simons, impressed. And why are the Jews beloved for the Father's sake? Verity had the answer to this. Because of the promises God made to their forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and David. Yes, he agreed. The Jews call these Old Testament characters their fathers. So God is saying here that he loves the Jews because of what he had promised long ago to their early fathers. Now, I could take you to passage after passage in the Old Testament prophecies where God talks about restoring the Jews to the land that he promised to Abraham. Verity has been quite interested in these promises, he stated with a smile in her direction, and she knows Abraham was promised the land of Israel for his descendants and also for himself. Turning back in his Bible, Mr. Simons continued, I'll just take you to one of these prophecies. Ezekiel chapter 36. If you read this chapter and the next three, you'll find it very exciting reading. These four chapters only began to be fulfilled in the 20th century, and they won't be completely fulfilled until Jesus has returned to earth to deliver Israel from a massive northern invasion. Reading through Ezekiel chapter 36, verses 17 to 20, Mr. Simon showed them that this prophecy explained how God would scatter Israel into all countries of the earth, because they had displeased him so much in their own land. Everywhere the Jews were driven, it would be a slur against God. They were supposed to be the people of God, and now it would look to other nations as though God couldn't protect his own people. Not many people understood that the Jews' scattering was a fulfillment of God's prophetic word. Mr. Simons asked Peter to read verses 22 to 24. Peter turned his page and read, Therefore say unto the house of Israel, Thus saith the Lord God, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which ye have profaned among the heathen whither ye went. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which ye have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Lord, saith the Lord God, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen, and gather you out of all countries, and I will bring you into your own land. Noticing a few confused looks, Mr. Simon said, Why is God choosing to gather Israel out of the nations again? Peter had seen the reason. Because of his name's sake. He says clearly it wasn't for their sake. That's good, Peter, Mr. Simon's encouraged. By God's name, God is referring to his reputation. God made promises way back in the Old Testament, the promises that Verity referred to. He promised to give the land of Israel to those forefathers and their descendants. What else did he promise, Verity? Remembering back, Verity added, God promised that Jesus would sit in Jerusalem on David's throne. He promised that Abraham would inherit the land of Israel, and those who were baptized into Jesus would also have a part. That's great, he nodded. So God has a lot planned for the land of Israel when Jesus returns. What we see happening in Israel today is in preparation for the exciting events of the future. God didn't establish Israel again as a nation because the Jews were faithful to him, but rather because the time period of the Gentiles is almost at an end. God is bringing everything into place for his promises to be finally fulfilled in the earth. The prophecy carries on into chapter 37, explaining how the nation of Israel will once again have a king. They will once again be righteous and willing to follow God's laws. They will have peace, and a new temple will be built among them for the whole world to worship in. When this happens, then all the nations around will eventually come to know that God has accomplished what he promised long ago. So when will Israel become righteous? Peter asked, trying to put it all together. Peter, if you look up Zechariah chapter 12 and read it through, you'll see that there is a time of trouble coming for the nation of Israel. Ezekiel 38 also speaks of this trouble and indicates it will come when Israel is dwelling in peace and safety. At this time of great destruction in Israel, when many nations gather against Jerusalem for war, Jesus himself will save the Jews. He will be the deliverer from Zion we read about in Romans chapter 11. The Jews who survive this war will look on Jesus and realize in shock that the man who their forefathers crucified many years ago has delivered them from total obliteration. These extremely humbling experiences will turn the Jews around nationally, and they will want to change their lives. From this point on, they will choose to serve God in truth and accept Jesus as their Messiah. Peter nodded thoughtfully. It was coming together in his mind. "So you're saying," he reiterated, "that God didn't bring the Jews back to the land of Israel because they were doing anything good. Instead, they were regathered because of God's plan to set up a kingdom for his son on the earth." "Yes, exactly," Mr. Simons nodded, pleased to see Peter had understood. Mrs. Bryant was looking rather disturbed. "Where do faithful Christians fit into this whole picture?" Mr. Simons could see that he needed to explain how all this would fit together in the kingdom. "You have to understand, firstly, that the thousand-year reign of Christ on the earth has various components. There will be a king, Christ. There will be rulers, the immortal believers, and there will be subjects, those people who survive Armageddon. The faithful Christian's hope is to be one of the immortal rulers with Christ in his kingdom. The Jews will be just like any other mortals on the earth at this time, privileged to live in the time of this kingdom, but still subject to sin and death. At the end of this thousand-year period, there'll be a second resurrection spoken of in Revelation chapter 20. That is when all the mortal people who have lived during Christ's millennial reign will be brought before a final judgment and given life eternal if they lived a faithful life, or eternal death if they were unfaithful." Thomas had been trying to understand all this, and he thought he might have a point to add. "I guess the Jews will be privileged to live in the very same place as where Jesus will reign from." Nodding, Mr. Simons agreed. "Yes, so much could be said on this subject. You're right, Thomas. The capital city of the whole earth will be a glorified Jerusalem, as it says in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. Jesus will be there ruling on his throne, and all nations will have to make yearly pilgrimages to worship at Jerusalem. The Jews will be in their own land, of course, and be very privileged to be in the midst of so many spiritual leaders and spiritual activity." Glancing at the clock on the wall, Mr. Bryant got up. "Thanks for the discussion," he said politely. "I'm not sure I agree with all that's been said, but it's rather interesting to consider. Perhaps, though, it's time we all went to bed." "Yes, I see it's past 11," Mr. Simons agreed. "Where would you like us to sleep?" Mr. Simons was given Peter's room, and Mrs. Bryant kindly showed Verity the guest room. "I hope you'll be comfortable, dear," she said. "Just call me if you need anything." Thomas and Peter found sleeping bags and stretched out on the carpet in front of the glowing embers of the fireplace.